This broadcast is part of the Atlanta Business League's official 90th anniversary celebration.
This is Lessons from Leaders, an Atlanta Business League podcast.
My name is Karen Deckett, and I own Deckett Design Group and DDG Development LLC.
And she will spend the next 30 minutes sharing stories about her life and business breakthroughs. Lessons from Leaders is a part of the Atlanta Business League's Telling Our Story broadcast series.
Karen Deckett readily admits that she was a daddy's girl. In fact, she actually credits him knowing that she could be an architect way before she could possibly see her own talent.
And he would bring home little books or brochures, and there was one that was bathrooms, and you basically got to put, it had a piece of Mylar you put over it, and you took a crayon, and then you could color in whatever you wanted to make the bathroom. And I got hooked on that. I said, oh, this is cool. This is really good. I started when I was about 5 years old because my daddy was a contractor. He was a sole proprietor, didn't want to work with anybody. He came from Harlem. He had a New York accent. And even though we were raised in Rochester, New York, my father always toted me around with him and asked me things or tell me things. And so I gained the familiarity of the craft. So it was sort of like an easy thing. I felt the sense that I could be good at this. And mind you, this is 1950s, 60s, early 60s.
Those aspirations were unusual for a woman of that era. Her goals were even rarer for someone black to pursue. However, Karen had success because just after earning an undergraduate degree from Ohio University, she went home to Rochester, and that's where she got her first opportunity.
And the day that I got home, I got a call from Xerox Corporation, and they hired me. This is 1969. They were building their new corporate headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut, and they needed additional people. So I was initially hired on as contract, and I basically designed the headquarters in Stamford with the rest of the team. And we did mostly interior architecture, and that's been my forte all my life.
She stayed with Xerox almost 5 years, but it took a lot less time than that for her exceptional talent to catch the eye of the company's founder.
I had some very special projects because I got to design for the founder of Xerox, Joe Wilson. His office is in New York and his home in Rochester. Brilliant, brilliant man. Wonderful, warm man. He knew everybody's name. You could just introduce yourself and not see him for another 6 months and he would tell you your name. He was an amazing person.
Karen also designed company showrooms for Xerox, which actually became an unpredictable occupation.
The problem was, this was 1972, and Students for a Democratic Society, also known as SDS, were basically bombing some of our showrooms because of the fact that we represented the corporate entity. So it was quite interesting to be living in New York City at that time because I never knew what I was going to be faced with or whether or not my facilities would be there for me to even evaluate. So people forget about those things, but it was quite exciting.
Exciting, yes. You might also use the word preparatory. Karen never knew which of her showrooms might get blown up, and as a black female architect, she also never knew what she was going to face next. But before she followed her heart to pursue a career as an architect, she took a brief detour as a National Urban Fellow. The organization recruits young people and develops them to be leaders in local government. Karen's time with the organization was spent in Flint, Michigan.
I met and married my husband in the middle of the fellowship. I also became the first African-American female head of planning for Flint, Michigan. That's another story. This was back in 75. It was just so cold.
And what does a young, gifted, and black couple do when stuck in a town capable of generating weather that drops down to 9 degrees below zero in March? They headed south with a little unusual help from friends.
And so we decided to take a one-way ticket down and So we moved to Atlanta, unemployed.
But before that,
we all went to Las Vegas with our friends, and everybody gambled and gave all the earnings to us to let us move to Georgia. I've had wonderful moments in my life and wonderful people surrounding me.
It wasn't a complete shot in the dark.
I had family here. We moved into 220 Sunset Avenue in Vine City. Why is that so noteworthy? Because right now it's finally been put on the National Historic Register as Maynard's childhood home. Well, how about it was my first home when I got here, and it's how I basically met and fell in love with the Kings. And to this day, still am a friend of the families.
One of the purposes of this series is to show you the interconnectedness of the Black business community in Atlanta, Georgia. Here's some history. The Maynard Karen mentions is Maynard Holbrook Jackson. The world remembers him as the first African-American mayor in Atlanta. But another part of his legacy was using the power of his office to open doors in professional and trade industries that had been closed to qualified African-Americans for decades. The Kings Karen describes as neighbors were, of course, the family of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Now, if you don't know who he is, you might want to just stop listening because there's no hope. Back at the podcast, Karen's education, planning credentials, and her connections earned her a job few women had back in the 1970s.
I was hired by the city of Atlanta basically to do all of their non-housing community development block grant program projects, which at that time, and this is 74, was about $43 million, and I was given two staff people to work with me. They had another division that was doing housing, and they had 12 staff people for $5 million, but we got the job done and basically did everything from landscaping to closing out urban renewal projects.
But the 1970s didn't offer a lot of support to women who operated in science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics. That's now known as STEAM professions. Karen was ahead of her time.
But it was like I was the girl. I mean, there was like 15, 16 projects all over the city that we were working on. Plus, I wrote two innovative grants, and the city received about $1 million for my grand innovations. I was the girl, and it was all the guys, and so it was a situation where I was just tired of constantly proving myself.
So she enhanced her skills by becoming an attorney.
And one of the issues that I had was that I would render an opinion, and then they would go find an attorney to basically sign off on my opinion, because I did not have a Juris Doctorate at the time. So it was about 1978, and I enrolled to go get my law degree, and I was going to pursue land use law and also start my family. I was also asked at that time to head up the director of basically the Department of Planning, but I had made up my mind what direction I wanted to go in. Oddly enough, it changed on the beach, pregnant with my third child in 1982, when I said, I love architecture. I'm staying with it. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I will do it.
She did, and it wasn't easy. She took freelance jobs. She worked for firms that didn't pay well. Even worse, she worked for companies that abused her skills. Then, the man who set her on the path toward being an architect finally painted a verbal picture of her professional life from his perspective. As he did when she was a child, her father shared observations that once again changed Karen's life.
And he said to me, Karen, there are two forms of prostitution, and I think you're being under one of them.
And what on earth did he mean by telling her that?
Well, you can have your mind prostituted or your body prostituted. But when you're not being paid a good wage, when you're not being elevated and acknowledged for your capabilities and credibility, but you're bringing in money, whether it's to the firm or to a corporation or a governmental entity, and that you're taking on those kinds of roles and winning with them. So that was his way of saying you're being taken for granted. But because he said it in the way and manner that he said it, it was so much more visual. And so I remember that.
Karen's father died a few months after he told her to stop prostituting her mind. She took his advice seriously, found a partner, and started her company shortly after his funeral.
April 15th, 1985. And the beauty of it was we had one project that was awarded to us just as we opened the doors, which was Dobbins Air Force Base Army Reserve renovation, and it was a large project. So we really had something that we could start off with, and we did an excellent job.
Something she continued to do, but now operating the company by herself.
My partner left in 88. We were starting to be recognized and acknowledged for a unique skill, and that is that due to my law degree and due to my intensive skills in space planning and basically creating environmental space, and this, mind you, is still the mid-80s, was we were basically visited by some specialty firms out in California that said you really need to do judicial planning and development, and it looks like something that you would really not only benefit by, but you could really gain clients. And this was an amazing accolade, but it was also a very good way for us to find a niche that we could identify with, that we weren't competing with the bunch, that we were competing just amongst a few. And most of them, all of them except me, were male. And so we proceeded to start doing that, marketed, went to judges, and basically clerks of court, and told them what our resources were. And just as that was going on, Fulton County was developing a new government and judicial center. And so we won a contract with them under another majority firm, and they were seeing our skills. And they were so pleased with them that basically, even though we weren't the prime and getting the bulk of the money, we basically were seen as the expert.
Again, Karen was exactly where she was supposed to be, doing exactly what she was meant to do. Her company soon started landing contracts as the prime or majority firm in charge. In the world of construction and contracting, that's a very big deal.
What prime means is that you're the entity that the owner is contracting with. You are the one in charge. Then there may be other consultants under you that you oversee their work and you direct the total project. And so being prime means that basically you're the conductor of the design.
In some industries, being prime means there's a sense of camaraderie and peers share notes to support each other. That doesn't happen often in construction, and it never happened for Karen, which means she forged her reputation as an incredible interior architect without a blueprint.
I have really never had any mentors. There have been some people who have given me a little advice, but in my profession, it is extremely competitive. So everybody's competing against one another. So it's very hard to get those who will give you guidance. I was also in a man's world, and I think this is in the 80s and the 90s, it was still a situation of, oh, her over there. And then her over there was starting to take on very large-scale projects and succeeding and winning accolades and published in magazines and newspapers and getting awards from AIA for Justice, that it was like, well, maybe she does know what she's doing.
That's why she was able to design work that speaks for itself all over the city. Karen, though, didn't think her purpose in life was just to do good work. She really thought her reason for being here was to help others.
But the goal was to make sure we could bring on others. So we always promoted additional minority firms to get work from the work we were doing. It wasn't hard to do that. And if you were in a commanding seat or in a place where you can influence, then that's what I did. I saw nothing wrong with it. It ended up getting the procurement area or facilities area to break down where you could the discrete portions of an architectural project where it allows another DBE firm to have that role. And that was like 1994, so this was a big, you know, because really affirmative action didn't really start till about 87. So within 7 years, we were now being able to provide additional resources, whether they were in engineering or surveying or furniture procurement or lighting design or graphics. We were starting to find and show other areas where they could gain more DBE participation, more minority participation than they would have if they just hired this one architect. We also broke down between architecture and interior architecture. So the whole thing was to show owners how they can basically get more than just what this prime architect is bringing to the table. And it gave a whole lot more participation. And the goals started increasing all the way up to 30%, 35% of minority participation. But that was just part of the process for us. We wanted to be able to be inclusionary.
Karen was also intentional about the types of projects she added to her company's portfolio.
Well, for me, we didn't want to do jails. We would do the courthouses, but we wouldn't do jails, because we knew who the population was, and we didn't want to support that type of a facility.
However, being a DBE firm both expanded her opportunities in Georgia and limited them in the rest of the country.
The problem, and let me explain this in terms of nationwide, when you are classified as a DBE or a minority firm, for the purposes of the project, you have to show that you have existence in that municipality or in that county or in that state. And I think I can only count on my hand, even now, maybe 5 DBE firms that can do nationwide work, because you have to establish an office in that. Otherwise, they want to pull from their own minority resources of that locale. They may bring you in as a consultant for something that's a specialty, but we saw, especially after, I would say after the Olympics or 1996, we were seeing that the tide was changing, that basically if you weren't certified by that state, certified as a DBE, for that municipality or county, whatever, they really were hesitant to even bring you in.
Her firm did get brought in on local projects that allowed Karen to create buildings that, even today, are truly inspired.
We've had great, notable work, and I was very honored by being selected, not just for one, but we actually did 2 Olympic venues. We did the Horse Park Encounters. Do not ask me about my affiliation with horses, because it doesn't exist. And we also worked on Wolf Creek shooting venue. 2 of the areas that are not my forte, but it again, what we were able to do, our planning and programming expertise will always be relevant, and our credentials are still housed with the International Olympic Committee headquarters. And I just have to give a shout out to my sister friend, Shirley Franklin, for basically fostering the growth of women in architecture in this particular area. And then, of course, the design of the Maynard Holbrook Jackson Jr. International Terminal at the airport. It was a joint venture. I had another prime as my partner, but there was just the two of us. And that one, I still pinch myself to say, I can't believe that we did this. As I say, if you give us a challenge, we'll meet the challenge. I'd never done until I got to the airport and was doing the international terminal. I'd never done a parking lot deck, but there's always a first time to do something. They were happy. They were satisfied. And that's what it really gets down to, is making your clients happy.
What Karen Duckett has achieved in her professional life is really nothing short of incredible. The mother of three, a wife, trailblazing interior architect, and someone who has helped others get into the industry. That's why what she says next is disheartening.
Have I seen any other minority firms follow behind me in quote-unquote criminal justice and courthouse design? No. Ours is a hard life. It's an ebb and flow life. When you have a recession, people aren't designing and building space. They may be building them, but they've already been designed, but they're not looking for new work to do. I had looked for successors for me, and I wasn't being picky. Actually, I was being generous. But most of those that I brought in to succeed and take over the business, they liked all the perks that they got for being number two in the firm, but they weren't willing to take the risk.
And of course, she offered what she had built to her children while also giving them the freedom to chase dreams as she had done.
My oldest basically has a master's of landscape architecture and is a landscape architect, but he didn't pursue the field. He worked with me for a while, but it wasn't where he wanted, the direction he wanted to go into.
Karen speculates that one reason she doesn't see other Black women or Black people flock to her field is that it often takes a very strong personality to not only take charge, but stay focused.
I was known as a bee. I'm sure it wasn't one that was flying, but I was open and honest, and I was truthful. There were times whereby I had to look at, Karen, you have this law degree. You cannot, quote unquote, you cannot sign this contract. I don't care how much income you're going to lose based on what they're requiring and what requesting. You can't do it. And at that point, I would become aggressive. My aggressive aspect only occurs when I'm fighting for something and how hard I've got to fight for it. And then with my analytical, we always made sure that we had the facts to back it up. I'm watching today's political agenda and the whole issue of fact-checking, and I was doing that just to get work, to make sure that there was nothing they could criticize us about. There was nothing that they could find fault. They could only say, we don't want you because we don't want you. We were going to be as squeaky clean as we could be.
Duckett Design closed in 2020.
Most of our clients have always been government and institutional clients. They were pulling back. Jobs were being canceled or put on hold indefinitely. And at that time, I was working with a staff that were basically on a contract basis. We were evolving to their independency. I was asked why I didn't sell the firm. Again, being a minority firm, what you've got to sell is what you've got in work and your portfolio. Because once you sell it to a majority firm, the DBE or the minority status goes away. It is meaningless. If you're owned by a subsidy that is a majority firm, you're no longer a DBE. So there weren't any minority individuals who wanted to purchase our firm, as good as it was. So we just sort of faded out. I said, well, let me step back. And I was having such a good time stepping back. I just didn't want to step forward anymore. And with COVID, and at the time, I'd like to say that I am younger than I look, but I'm not. So it was time for me to go have a good time. I left open DDG development because it can do special projects or what I want to do. If I need to contract with somebody, it has great flexibility. I can't give up the firm's corporation status. I pay it every year. I can't give up my license. because of the fact that it's been such a part of me for most of my life. But that's why we did it. And most of the people that were working for me are now doing something differently, which is what I thought was going to happen.
So does that mean Karen has stopped working? Of course not.
I'm project managing right now the first African-American female statue that will be erected in the downtown of Atlanta, Georgia. And it will be the first African-American female statue ever erected in the center city of any city in the United States. It's being done by an African-American sculptor, Ed Dwight, and it is of Zenona Clayton.
And I'm quite sure that after the sculpture of Zenona Clayton is finished, Karen Duckett will find another project, because architecture is something that has been a part of her life for more than 50 years. Many people don't realize that when African-American entrepreneurs in Atlanta struggle to get their piece of the pie, there were qualified, talented, experienced women like Karen in that number. It's easy to overlook them. But even without mentors or consistent support, Karen Duckett spent her life being more of a dream catcher than a dream chaser. And in 2023, millions of people relax in, travel through, and enjoy the creative designs of the buildings her talented mind moved from concept to completion.
You've just listened to an Atlanta Business League episode of Lessons from Leaders. This is part of the Telling Our Story broadcast series produced by Marty Covington of The Right Ones, recorded at The Plug Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, and edited by Chase Allen of Marchaz Co-Productions, LLC. All rights for this broadcast are reserved.